life, universe, and everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvie Avery.
Well, hello everyone, this is Sylvie Avery and welcome to Spirit Work, the metaphysical and spiritual information show designed to stretch your mind and help you to think outside of the box. On today's show, as usual, my husband Nick will be deep trance channeling, and today we will be discussing all sorts of interesting things with spirit guide Gregory Hay, and we'll tell you a little bit about him in a short while. We'll be discussing things like ancient legends and actual luck and what you can do about it and how we can heal the earth physically and in reality to change not only our pathways and well-being but planet's pathway. So we'll be delving into all sorts of things like folk magic and white witchcraft. Actually, you know, let's talk about things that maybe... Do they exist? Are they real? Can we actually sort of dabble and do something beneficial? What things aren't beneficial? And all sorts of interesting things like that. And if you'd like to join us with a question relating to what we're talking about, I mean, it's a huge subject. I mean, it really is. We could go all over the place with this, and we probably will. But anyway, if you'd like to phone us, it's toll free in the US. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756, and international callers is 001-530-876-3222, but the international call you have to pay for, of course.
And hi, I'm Mick Avery. Welcome to the show, Spirit's Work on BBS Radio, and of course at this time it's at 5 p.m. GMT, which is... still 10 a.m. US time, but that's because the daylight saving time has gone and moved itself. So thanks for Christianity for doing that. And anyway, this is BBS Radio, of course. And we have to say that welcome to our show. And we have more about us on our websites. You can go to www.spirit-teaching.com, also www.mickavery.com, and www.spiritswearradio.com. And if you want to know more about us, our books, our CDs, you can visit any one of those websites. Or if, of course, you want to book an Akashic reading, which are very popular and a lot of people do. But we also do other kinds of readings as well, to do with other sorts of issues and situations. Now, as Sylvie said, I'm a deep trance medium, and each week live on the show, I channel Gregory Hay, who had an earth life 300 years ago. I have the ability to completely hand over my physical body to the spirit world so they may use it to speak through, and I know absolutely nothing about what has happened during this time. When I go into the deep trance state, my conscious mind and my spirit are transported elsewhere by the spirit team who work with us, and then they bring me back when... the spirit communicator leaves. I not only miss the whole show, but I very rarely remember where it was they took me either. It's not for me to know where they took me, unlike shamanistic situations. So anyway, without further ado, I'm going to hand you back to Sylvie, and have a great show, everyone. Yeah,
thanks, Nick. Yes, Gregory, who I mentioned, is the spokesperson for a group of spirits of higher intelligence called the White Cloud Group. And they consist of great minds as well as ordinary people. And between them, they've got vast knowledge and insight. They come to bring their teachings for the need for us to have understanding beyond the constraint of our human minds. They bring us information and educational situations to do with the mechanics of the universe and the spirit world and how this affects us and all of us without exception. And hopefully will help us to become more knowledgeable and better informed as to the nature of our existence on Earth, as well as obviously our continued life after physical death. So if you have an idea of a topic or a subject that you'd like us to do a program around, do get in touch. You can actually either go to our website, www.spirit-teaching.com, or just email me directly on enq@spirit-teaching.com, and I will put the questions. It can be just an individual question. It doesn't matter. Not everybody likes speaking on the telephone, and it is a situation very often when we do the program that people just like to listen and take things in. So sometimes I get emails consequently then a few weeks later or a few days later rather, and with their thoughts of what they heard and things that they would like to have found out more about. So that's absolutely fine too. We don't mind backtracking. It's really the spirit world needs to talk to us about things that we want to know. They don't want to just come and lecture us. And I've said this many times, and that really is what it is. It's not just monotone sort of, you know, lectures, boring, yah-yah. So it's stimulating, thought-provoking, and enlightening debate as well. You know, you might have your own ideas, and this is it. They are here to debate with us and actually chew things over and get different points of view there, so that it can initiate different thoughts upon us. That's what it's all about, stretching the mind. So anyway, I do believe Gregory's here.
With love and light, blessings be upon your pathway, dear friend, little bird.
Hi, Gregory.
Hello, friend. Hello.
You've had a couple of weeks off.
Yes, I believe so.
From the programme.
Well, from this, yes.
Absolutely, yes. And we've missed everybody, haven't we? Missed everybody. And the thing is, it was one thing after another. It wasn't anything that was planned. But anyway, we're back now, and we're very excited to be back. So, okay, I really, you know, I was just looking at my list here of questions, and I'm thinking, where on earth do we start? Would you like to start, because obviously we had a meeting about this program earlier, and
yes.
So we have a rough idea, although I do have some questions from listeners, but I can bring them in later on.
Well, yes, very
good. But would you like to do a little synopsis to start us off? Or
well, to begin with then, dear friends, we look at one another, don't we? We look at the sparkling eyes when in physical life. We look at the energy when in the spirit world. We see and understand the feelings that are given off from emotional depths of both gratitude, love, and despair. The emotional givings of physical life as they are brought about upon the journey of life. And so too it is within the spirit world also. However, when you are having a physical life, there are situations that are brought about which, in a sense, bring about the structure of fairness or bring about the structure of adhesion between one another and between the place and yourself of where you live. So, to begin with then, for example, we would say that there may well be situations where people deeply struggle within their own home environment, within their own home life, purely and simply because of the energy which resides there. It may not be something of their own making, but something that they succumb to nonetheless. When we are looking at different forms of ritualistic practice driven by human beings, do we actually accent the same kinds of rigor of practice toward other animals? Animals can be included in rigorous practice. For example, with the hunter of Herrn, perhaps to do with situations in medieval history of creating abundance within the situation, the association that human beings have in being able to contain, grasp for food in order to feed one's family and even oneself. If you are looking for ritualistic practice, what are you looking for within the energies that drive it? So first of all, dear friend, we have to ask of all of peoples to look at what it is they are wanting to attract to themselves. if you are a person who then, for example, wishes to live in the wilds of your country, and perhaps that your wits are purely and simply pitted against those of wildlife, or purely and simply pitted against the climate and the whole atmosphere, the situation of seasons as they move past you, how are you going to invite the energies of the world in which to help you? Because in a sense, as a human being, you're a being who actually pits themselves generally against one another and against the environment. Because that has been the mark of survival for human beings for this past 5 million years or so. So this whole situation, when we're looking at the matters of ritualistic practice, or when we're looking at different kinds of creations of luck or creations of good juju, good energy, good vibrations, something that overcomes negativity, or something that actually creates negativity on purpose. Maybe you are a white witch, or maybe you are a black witch. Whichever of the sacred parts of the arts you look at, or how you regard yourself within the kingdom of giving and the kingdom of accession, what you are deliberating about is how you bring yourself into alignment so as to make the best fist of it, so as to attract the right kind of luck or the right kind of energy, so that you may be successful in your quarry, in your hunting, or in your providing for your family, or in the earth providing for you. When we look at beings, either from the physical side of life, now return to our side of life, or in physical nature, we are seeing that all beings, to a certain extent, bring about a form of ritualistic practice in what they're doing. If you look at, for example, the courtship mating rituals of various kinds of beings, be they birds or animals, you will see that some of them give off little dances, some of them bring about a certain kind of sincere preening of their genetics and of their ability to create strong genetics within their symmetry of life, and so therefore entice mates. This is all that much of what the situation in human and physical life, in animalistic behavior, bring about within their behavior stances. So that when we're looking at very different models of very different beings, people who live in Africa or people who live wherever, maybe New York, maybe they live in Boston or some other outer place like Haiti, where are you going to draw the line between one set of behavior and another? If you observe geese, the way that they bring about their ritualistic mating experience, are we going to observe those in exactly the same light as those of swans? Both actually mate for life, and both continue their practice of ritualistic behavior to one another, declaring one another's love every single season, and sometimes more so. They actually talk and discuss the different situations coming to them and where best they need to graze or where best they should spend the night. Such things you might not assimilate with ritualistic practice or those derived from the earth or the path of well-being. But isn't that what ritualistic practice is? The arts of the white witches to do with not just witchery in respect of the blessings of the planet, but actually to do with the blessings of themselves, one another, all forms of life, that of abundant harvest, that of abundant yielding, from Mother, Father, God, to those who, in the respect of the earth, are the guardians of it. So therefore, we can see quite clearly that even within the white witchery forms that are taking place upon the earth, that there are a great many subjects here within this, a great many, not platitudes really, but white witchcraft, for example, is an exemplary way to bring containment within the earth, an exemplary way to follow the earth's energies, to align oneself with the earth in order that the best be yielded from it, to create the right energy, to form that energy into the loving bond human beings and many animals need in order for that to survive, and in order for themselves and their own genetics to be uppermost within the ability to produce and co-produce, and therefore continue with their genetic line. All of this seems a bit mechanical, perhaps, one might think, except for when you think about what about all of the other ritualistic practices that adorn the earth within one faith or religion after another, the thousands of different faiths or religions, whether it's Baha'ist, whether it is Judaism, whether it is Christian or Muslim. Spirituality takes a place within one's heart and within one's memory that appears to drive one individual into a sort of form of self-sacrifice that also then implies their genetics to be better than others. And most certainly how human beings have turned this around is really been to do with how human beings have then assimilated that their religious practice or their order, whether it be monks or whether it be their order of ritualistic practice, is then superior to everyone else's ritualistic practice. When we look at the native ways of interacting with the world and the universe itself, we don't just look to beings of one form or race. We look to many aboriginals of many different descriptions and forms, regardless of where they live. All have their binding with the earth, have white witchery within their works, within their guiding hands and their guiding thoughts. In many respects, this means to say that even within the pagan views, one would see that they were blessed and that they actually had an infinite path. One might say that part of the problem that had then ensued with both Christianity and Islamic revolution was really to do with the abandonment of white witchery, the abandonment of the pagan ways, purely and simply because theirs was to be painted the only way. So this meant that it was, in a sense, the abandonment of the earth because human beings had to be at the top of the food chain and therefore every other being was subservient to it and therefore could be used by it. And oftentimes, in human terms, that has meant abuse. When we look at different situations, contriving how we can move through a ritualistic practice that means something that is actually going to impact upon the earth and really be meaningful is just as simple as your way of life, as how you respond to simple matters of the production of eggs or the production of some other thing. Maybe it's some kind of material that you wear. Denim, for example, which is oftentimes either made in China or in India by children using caustic dyes that continue to move the water into various states of blue from all rivers that are a part of that network. Are we seeing any form of ritualistic practice in how you, as human beings, obtain certain kinds of clothing? Or is it a part simply of your genetic underplay that you are bringing this kind of ritualistic experience, like painting your face? A part of this is to not just attract a mate. Birds do it too, of the feathered variety. And that in many respects we can see that all forms of life preen themselves in order to make themselves look the most and attract the most reverie from their opposite beings so that they can bring about the right genetic imprint to enhance life, to make it better. So we are seeing ritualistic practice moving right across from human beings down to the noble ant. We can see many different kinds of beings who bring about ritualistic practice, even bees, to show and indicate where the next nectar pot is to come from. And we can see, rightly so, that ritualistic passage is really to do with matters of authority, matters of bringing impartment to, from self to the earth, to the universe, and beyond.
Okay, thank you. And before we sort of go into more specific situations to do with that, aren't we just, isn't life a ritualistic practice for human, let's talk about human beings anyway.
Yes,
at the moment. You know, I mean, or you could say habit, ritualistic practice, I'm not sure where one begins and one ends. But
no, quite
don't,
so.
Don't we do this all the time and not realise it, you know, when we, you know, how we do the order of things that we do from the minute we get up in the morning.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we
so.
Go, you know, whether it's washing, eating.
Brush your teeth.
Or whatever, yeah, whatever. Absolutely,
yes.
Everything that we do a certain way. Each person has their own way of doing things.
Yes, and certainly sometimes those ways of doing things tend to either get in the way of one's life, or that they're just simply the way that human beings in the physical sense can cope with approaching the world. They have to have a certain kind of number of things, issues that are put to one side. Yes, I've done all of those things now. I'm presentable to the world. And that's a kind of a way of, in a sense, putting on a different face. Not the way that perhaps you felt when you first awoke, came into consciousness from your living experience on the other side of life. But rather that what you were doing, what you were engaging in, was a different kind of ritualistic experience, not something that really was venerable necessarily to oneself, although I would have to admit that bathing and that kind of thing had often been a ritualistic pastime, not just by human beings, but actually by monkeys, even by lions, even though they hate water. Tigers especially, they have a great ritualistic practice about bathing, about their whole situation with water.
So presumably, even down to the way we actually do things, that could change our situation if we actually did things in a different way at home as well, do you think?
It is possible, my dear friend, yes, I suppose so.
You know, I mean, a lot of it is actually just so that we don't forget to do certain things, so do you know what I mean?
Yes, but actually what I'm saying, though, is that if you added various things into your plot of what you do, so let's say then you're a person who showers every day, or some such thing as that, perhaps rather than just doing the motability situation of showering each day, but what you did was you actually used it as a time to bless yourself, to give yourself credence of the thoughts and feelings that you woke up with, perhaps if they were wrong ones, bad ones, negative ones, that you actually asked the spirit world as a form not of ritualistic practice, but that of a way of being anyway, so that we're not really talking necessarily about ritualistic situations or motivation, but that it actually is something that comes from the heart. I wish for to be recovered from my night's experiences or whatever, and so that I can begin the day anew. And that's really all we are saying within ritualistic practice or experience. It's not necessarily that you have to use overcomplicated words. You are merely simply engaging with the universe in order to bring about not a parallel journey, but to bring about your essence of your life. This is what you want to do formally with this day. You want to forget about or let go of issues, situations, or events that happened during your sleep time experiences or during the previous day. You are facing this day with a new voice, new mind, new openness. That means you approach it differently than you did yesterday. Not necessarily because yesterday was a fault or a failure or the disaster or something like that, although it may have been. It's actually so that you start each day with a blessing, with a kind of an inference that here I am, universe, I wish to make the best of my day this day.
Mm. Yes, absolutely.
And so therefore, in a sense, it's exactly the same as if you were a person who was bowing to the sun as it rises in the east. Perhaps it is the same, exactly the same way as people who did this for thousands and thousands of years, when upon the banks of the Tigris or banks of the Nile or wherever it was, that they actually honored certain energies to do with the life-giving process. And what better way than for other people to do this was actually to just simply stand there and watch the sun coming up and giving thanks for another new day and another opportunity to win the day. And don't forget, too, my dear friend, that within the native practice and experience, that many beings, actually, their whole font of knowledge in North American native culture has been to win the day. So part of their ritualistic experience, if you like, if you will, is in their praises of, O Holy Creator, please give me the righteous path of my ancestors. I'm asking here for help of those who have passed to the higher side of life.
Mm.
And therefore, they are actually embodying their whole energy, not giving it away to the spirit world, not diluting it in the favor of some dead uncle or aunt or mother, father, sister, brother, twice removed. Mm-hmm. It's actually to do with their forgiveness of their asking, rather, of their forgiveness of their past deeds from the previous day, and how they may then fight the new day with a new understanding, a new heart, a new love within their life.
And of course, they used to do that with the food that they had to kill and
Absolutely.
Eat to survive. And
yes.
So is there anything as well in the way that we eat our food at home? I don't want everybody to, you know, it to be too boring and that we're trying to turn everything into something, the home into a shrine. But
no, absolutely
is there anything that we can do when we do? I mean, very many
yes.
people, we do say prayers, say giving thanks for what we're about to receive and that sort of thing. And for the,
yes.
the animals that we eat and that,
yes.
Would that be a good idea, even Absolutely. If it was within your own mind?
Absolutely. And even if it was something that you actually didn't even look or ascribe to anything like being an animal, a piece of steak or something like that, how on earth would you know what part of the animal it came from, or even what animal?
Mm.
It is part of the removal, if you like, of human sentimentality that makes it all right to eat it. So perhaps part of the situation should be then that you would ask the animal, please, to forgive you for doing this, for creating this as a part of your pathway.
Mm.
That doesn't mean to say that I favor it or disfavor it. Please do understand. I understand within my own life. I, after all, ate chickens and goats and all different kinds of manner of beast and feathered being, purely and simply because we had to. We didn't really have that much choice.
Hmm. Okay. Well, let's stick to the home.
Yes, let's do
for
that.
Now.
Yes, yes. Quite soon.
Because we are still taking little trips out.
Yes, yes. And I was going to say, Ben, I do find that the whole situation surrounding animals absolutely fascinating, really and truly, particularly because the shamanic experiences really originated to do with native peoples, indigenous peoples in various quadrants of the physical earth life, how they would, in a sense, borrow the energy of the animal that they were stalking so as not to frighten them. That's part of the reason why shamanics always wore deer heads or something like that. And we're only talking about those kinds of animals. We're not talking about people going out and hunting bears or crocodiles or tigers or any other such ridiculous situation, because they never used to shoot for enjoyment. They never used to kill other beasts for their own pure pleasure or enjoyment. That was something that's actually left to the and is left to the limited social classes, and for those who are kings, queens, and various other peoples of status within a given society. Doesn't make them any better. In fact, it makes them worse. So I can quite clearly see that when you are looking at beings of ritualistic experience, when you take upon the shamanic ways, the ancient shamanic ways, traditionally of how it began, was purely and simply human beings trying to behave or emanate the energy of animals so that they would be able to get closer to their quarry and therefore make an easier kill of it. The situation then became that shamanics would want to utilize animal energy in order, as totems, for example, within different situations. They were considered as being good luck pieces. It's a bit like the reason why people chop off rabbits' feet or paws or tails or some other such thing, animal part, purely and simply as almost like an act of talisman, but also as an act of ritualistic practice and shamanic awareness. Shamanism is usually also, of course, about the journey, not necessarily about the taking of life. So there are many different facets to original shamanic thinking and how this is really brought about within the scope of real physical life now and activity now is completely different to how it was, say, 40, 50,000 years ago. But then, of course, everything is.
Well, I should
hope. We move on.
I was going to say, I hope so, yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Well, not everything of the ancient kingdom was bad.
Okay, right. Well, you'll have to think of some and come back to me on that, because that would be interesting to hear.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so, yes, keeping to the home and the things that we can do to actually change our situation within our environment at home, as we say, with the food and everything, without getting totally obsessive and over the top about it.
Yes.
Or paranoid or whatever.
Yes. I understand.
You know, because obviously there are situations that... what about smudging with sage?
Yes, absolutely so. I understand within the whole practice of smudging with sage, it's really to do with collecting negative energies, not necessarily one, because one is usually a point or problem or situation. Collective energies tend to be more to do with the spirit of the planet itself, or the attraction of other energies to the spirit of the planet within your dwelling space, or somewhere that is close to you, somewhere nearby.
Can you explain that a bit?
So, yes,
in respect of,
let's say then that perhaps you live in a place that you don't know the history of, but that you are aware that there are some situations that are around you, not necessarily deeply negative, but some that simply don't have the right feel to them. It may be, of course, if you live in an ancient country, that it was something to do with the product of war, or something to do with some situation, that event happened between peoples or between animals and peoples. Purely and simply, events of the past are very difficult to pin down. Oftentimes they leave triggers just sitting there in the way. And it's just for a living being, no matter what that living being is, it could be a deer or it could be a human being, that comes past that trigger state in a close enough proximity to allow it to fire off. And therefore, you have a resonant energy frequency which suddenly changes.
Okay, can I
just... And then you think that it's you, but it isn't.
Ah, okay. So this trigger, can you explain what a trigger is? So this is in...
Yes, of course.
An etheric situation?
Yes, yes. An etheric situation that actually has left a trigger so that because it was an event that happened in physical life, so the activity, let's say then, it was a situation. Yes, how about something that's very, very simple? A man beats a dog because it won't do what it's told.
Mm-hmm.
the dog actually smarts so much from its beating that it leaves an imprint of the energy, the message of the energy, in the fabric of the earth, because that's what human or physical animal behavior does.
Okay.
So that means to say that when you see a hawk in the sky and it suddenly drops from the sky and pounces on an animal, you don't know quite where it is, if you walked to around that place, you would feel the energy of the event that happened, even though it was one bird taking the life of another animal. That situation for food would still leave a residual imprint that, if you were sensitive enough, you would pick that up, purely as a part of the passage of the earth, of physical life and spirit life as it moves through the action of harmony and genetic evolutionary practice. So that means to say the animal, the activity, the negativity created by it, even though it was a fleeting moment, for example, if it was a hawk that caught a mouse, 3 seconds and it was passed and began becoming eaten.
Mm-hmm.
So that residual energy of the event of the mouse passing would have been left in the fabric of the place, of the in-situ scenario. That doesn't mean to say that you would definitely see it, but you would feel something as you move through it. Sometimes these can just be little prickles on the chest. Perhaps they could be just prickles on the skin or something like that. Just something as you pass through the sensory awareness of that fabric of place, simply because the situation, the event happened there. And then you move on. Oftentimes, human beings are either so thick-skinned or they are not of the right vibrational frequency that they would never pick these events up. And so oftentimes, you actually move through and past these events and fail to spot them. What can happen at times when events take place that you don't know anything about, for example, we will turn to situations perhaps with horses. Horses being ultimately sensitive, and because they are far more sensitive than human beings, means that they attest their energy and others' energy, everyone else's energy, to their own. That means to say they garland everything. They bring in everything. It's why they spook at the nearest and silliest of things, of objects. It's not just the object. It can be that they actually feel the sensitivity of things living past.
Okay.
And events living past. And part of the reason... So
because they feel uncomfortable at that time because they're picking up something. And absolutely. Then the slightest little thing... Yes. Triggers them into a spooky moment. They get
right.
frightened.
Yes, that's right.
Which seemingly is nothing to you, but they're already
in
a
very
state
real
of
to them.
Heightened awareness. Yes. From sensing these other things.
Yes. So if you wonder why that is, it's purely and simply because of the ultra sensitivity nature, because they are wearing their spirit. Their spirit is very close to their physical body nature. Do you see?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So then, moving back to the situation, when you're looking at the fabric of something in the physical life, you think of it only purely on a physical level, one-to-one. You are actually spending a lot of your time desensitizing oneself to the matters of higher spiritual sensitivity and higher sensitivity of your spirit vis-a-vis to the situation that exists upon the physical matrix of the earth. So what you're dealing with here is that when you move to a certain place and perhaps you see some kind of event out the corner of your eye, you're not sure what it is, and it suddenly disappears as quick as it arrived, the chances are that situation is not necessarily to do with you. Human beings always think that it's to do with them. Either their own ability, their spiritual awareness, a prowess, of dragging spirits toward them, or that it's actually to do with something completely different outside of their scope of reality. And purely simply a time field event that has happened because of one of these impersonal triggers.
That's happened regardless of you, but
absolutely.
It's happened because of you.
That's
because
right.
It's picked up your energy. Well, yes, it's ignited, reignited.
Yes. Absolutely so. And don't forget as well, my dear friend, if you go down to a stream and you place your hands in the water and it feels so lovely and so beautiful and then suddenly you feel something.
Mm.
And it doesn't feel quite right. And then it's gone, passed, and then you feel completely all right again. It's only because of the fact that water, too, holds memory of the beings who were within it.
Oh, well, not only at that spot, but that moves with it.
Yes,
that travels with it.
Of course, yes. Yes, okay. So you may have one little bit of water that's not become that diluted, but that's actually become, that's kept intact, in a sense. So the memory of it lives on, memory of an event. And it may well be something that happened many miles upstream, or perhaps even at the source. Or maybe it was just where water ran over some other activity that had happened and passed.
Hmm. Okay.
The earth does that too.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's a whole other section. Can we go back to smudging?
Oh, yes, please home? Do. Yes.
No, yes. But it's all
I'm sorry, I did not mean meander so.
No, it's absolutely fascinating, it is. And obviously we're going to be carrying on talking about this next week as well, because we need to go out into the big outdoors.
Oh, absolutely.
The world.
So that's why
talk
I wanted
about that.
To do that. Yes.
But if we're talking about...
smudging.
Yeah, creating creating the environment that we want to live in and what we can do about it.
Yes, so we smudge houses. One would smudge one's own house, perhaps once a week or something like that, purely and simply for the simple cause of eventing effects from the physical side of life, negative effects that you may have unwittingly brought in with you. I know so many people would say, what do you mean I don't bring any negative events with me? But that's actually what happens. And oftentimes you may not realize that you've done that. You don't swat spirit like flies and pretend that they actually don't exist, or that they've got caught up in your hair for some reason. Then so you have to use your special spirit brush or wand in order to get them out of your hair. Yes, sadly some people do.
You've obviously been, you've been listening to
been
something
been in many
else.
A boudoir, my dear friend, not to partake of the nature of the people there, but really just simply the activities they get up
to. Okay, so you can bring home with you thoughts and feelings, negative thoughts and feelings from the day, your workplace, and that sort of thing.
That's right.
As well. As, yeah,
yes,
as,
absolutely.
Okay.
And maybe it's not actually of the workplace environment, maybe it's just simply where you had to go. It might have been just as simple as that. Could have been perhaps a situation that wasn't even anything to do with you. Maybe an altercation on a bus journey that you had to make that was the journey prior to yours. Mm. And it can be just residual energy that had been left there.
Mm. Well, after the things that you were just talking about... yes, I mean, you might have to go through very negative areas, and then you come home with, okay, so then you carry these negative thoughts and feelings and that sort of thing with you in your aura.
Yes,
and
you may not know that they are there.
No.
That's the point.
No, so when you come home, you can smudge yourself and smudge the house with white sage. So for people that don't know, you get a bundle of white sage. And you just light the end and just waft it a little bit so that it's just smouldering, not flaming. And then you just you can find out about it on the internet, I'm sure, or whatever.
Yes, yes.
But so that's what we're talking about when we're talking about smudging.
Yes, and then you would, of course, use or cite some kind of invocation. I don't necessarily have to mean that they are highly spiritual or cultivating words. You can just simply ask for these negative energies to be let go of, to be cleared from your house, from your dwelling. You can just simply ask of the universe to allow this to happen.
Mm. Yeah.
Don't think of it as some grand situation that you have to paint order for... Yes, of course, you need to say it with respect, and you need to be able to say it with a sense of conviction. This is what I would wish to convey within my energy of how I want to proceed and how I wish for these energies to be set free.
Mm. So you would do this if you were feeling particularly bad. I mean, again, you don't want people to get totally obsessed with this.
No, absolutely not.
You know, if there are situations that you have to do once a week or once a month,
yes,
you find yourself in,
yes,
that you actually end up always feeling really bad afterwards, then
yes,
that would be a good idea, wouldn't it? And is,
yes,
there a particular way that you would go with the sage stick around the house or around your body? Is there a...
Yes, just
direction.
Yes, there is.
Specific direction.
It is usually that you do these things anti-clockwise.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that clearing energy is done in an anti-clockwise fashion. But please, my dear friends, don't be obsessive compulsive over it.
No, but all of these things, but you know, that was one of the reasons why we were going to talk about,
oh,
all,
yes,
of these things.
Absolutely.
You know,
so
I want to talk about curses and ancient legends,
of
and lucky charms and amulets.
Yes, yes.
All sorts of things I want to talk about through this little series.
Yes, I'm sure.
That we're going to embark upon. So,
yes, yes.
And we need to know what works, what doesn't, what's just a load of phooey and...
Phooey.
And what could be very helpful for us.
Yes.
You know.
Yes,
so, and, you know, and we all know that, you know, with luck, a lot of it is positive thinking, isn't it? So who cares sometimes, as long as we're not spending lots of money and getting ripped off by buying things that we don't need to, etc.
Yes, yes, quite so.
But it's luck and positive thinking is a very fine line there, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely so. And don't incur kinds of fortune that are then mistaken and then actually only make your life worse. Something sold as a game, as a Ouija board, for example, is most certainly not the avenue to take.
No, no. No, absolutely not. So, okay. We've done the smudging. Is there another word for white witchery? Because it's a bit off-putting for some people, and not everyone believes that,
yes,
they could be or do anything that involved white witchery.
Yes, but in actual fact, that's much of the problem to do with ritualistic behaviour within Christian movements, because in actual fact, they overtook many of the ancient ritualistic holidays and days that Druidism took as part of their way of ritualizing their life journey upon the earth, and many of these days of sacred state, not of course just to do with the equinox or not to do with various parts of the moon's ellipses and passage across the earth and around the sun, but purely and simply because of the fact that these were parts of their practice, and that they would do everything that they could in order to unsettle them. Don't forget, friends, that you are really only perhaps a few hundred years, if that, away from the general practice and use of bringing to the end of life all white witches. In fact, all witches.
Mm.
So this whole situation I actually treat with extreme reverence.
Mm.
I say white witchery, it sounds as though I'm being flippant. I am absolutely not.
No.
I regard white witchery as being very necessary, as being the study of the earth ancient magic and ancient ways of walking and being thankful for the earth and all it has to offer,
yeah,
within this human life experience or within the animalistic life experience.
Absolutely, and it's a very down-to-earth, grounded sort of, for me anyway, feeling, saying that.
Yes.
But I can understand why a lot of people might not, you know, I mean, all of this earth goddess and whatnot that you hear about these days, it all gets a bit... out of people's realms of understanding.
And somewhat egotistical.
And, yeah, exactly. So,
yes,
you know, let's just call it what it is, a good old-fashioned name.
White witchery,
yeah,
is really the name that we prefer for it.
Mm.
Nothing to do with the black arts.
No, not at all.
Nothing,
okay,
whatsoever.
I think we'll just go over to this question now from Todd in New York.
Yes, very well.
That I had an email from him. The significance, I can't say the word, hang on. The significance of salt water as an etheric cleanser. Can you tell me about this? I've heard that it is good for that, and that it also alleviates breathing disorders such as asthma, chest infections, hay fever.
Yes,
and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
There's salt caves as well, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. And when doing that, of course, it would be oftentimes it would be heated salt water, using a kind of using a cloth over the head in order to seep it into the lungs through the nose and various depending upon what passageways may be blocked at the time. The understanding of using salt water also has been predominant at some times in the makeup or early stages of physical mediumship as well. That is to use a salt water bath, that, in other words, a bowl of salt water that you have within the seance room in order to help those in the spirit world utilize the various different body part cell structure of the physical anatomy of the physical medium in order to bring about animation of materialization.
Okay. But for ordinary everyday people...
Yes.
So basically then, he was thinking about... he'd heard that you can use salt water as an etheric cleanser for stones.
Yes, absolutely.
So salt does have...
has many therapeutic effects.
Yes. But the etheric part... The physical mediumship situation that you were just talking about is slightly different, isn't it?
It is, yes.
So if we can... How does it help other people then in other ways to do with the spirit world?
Well,
in
respect at times, it's in a sense the ether world, but it's also to do with the physical body as well. Sometimes, for example, if you bathed in using salt water, warm salt water, and you use that upon your skin, it's not just etheric cleansing that you're bringing about, but it's actually ultra forms of cleansing as well to do with various kinds of situations to do with the conditioning of the skin. That's not to say that you would do it all the time. It's actually something that you shouldn't really do much more than once a month.
Yes, but that's nothing to do with your auric field, is it?
Not particularly. The greatest thing that you could do really for your auric field or for anything to do with your energy is brought about in the right kind of meditation and the right kind of centering within your being, rather than using some kind of altruistic physical situation that then helps you to feel that you are cleansed because you've gone through this ritualistic experience of doing it. It is actually better to do something that is very positive and proactive.
Okay, I'm going to squeeze this question in.
Yes, perfect.
From Rose in California, because they're all linked. Perfect timing. Can germs like flu and measles, chickenpox, that sort of thing, contaminate or attack our aura?
No.
Okay, you can't hold it within your auric field.
No, absolutely not, no. But you can show it within your aura if you have had it, or simply as a containment of the situation that you had. So, for example, chickenpox in itself has an aura of itself.
Ah, right.
So if you have had it as a physical being, it will be a part contaminant around your aura. That doesn't mean to say that it will continue to contaminate you.
No.
So just let's be clear about this. It's just a part of the cell memory. And therefore, as your cells continue to provide, produce, and store memory so that the, shall we say it was chickenpox or something like that, gradually that memory will dissipate over a period of time. There will always, of course, be a time when moments when that memory are still imprinted there. All memories are part of thought because they're a living thing. So it means to say that not just thoughts of the mind or the physical brain, but of the actuality, the action, the activity that went on. So even if it's about a bug or a virus or some other bacteria, it is still going to have an adverse effect and leave a residual energy within your aura, not something that you will then react to at a later date.
No, right. It doesn't hold it.
No, absolutely not. It doesn't hold the disease.
No.
It's a past event.
It doesn't, because that was her other question, and we almost out of time. But
so that's why I'm answering this part of it. It is just an event. It doesn't hold the containment of cell structure and anatomy, therefore continuing the possibility that it can then reinfect you.
Mm. Yes. Or anybody else.
Or anybody else. Mm. No, quite so. Absolutely.
Mm. Okay, and there's another part to that
so
question.
So not to worry.
Next week. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yes, well, bring the question up again, friend, and we will go from there.
That's okay.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely fine. Okay, well, wonderful.
Very well, then.
Thank you very much,
yes,
Gregory.
Yes. With love and light, blessings as ever, little bird. Blessings, everyone, whoever you are, who may hear this now or in the future. God bless upon your journey. God bless.
And we hope you've enjoyed the show. Our website, once again, is www.spirit-teaching.com, where you can find out more information about us and our work and also our readings. We do Akashic readings. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work. Until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.